Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Jeff Marsh, who's serving as our worship associate, our music director, Hal Walker, and these fine folks in the Fallow Time Folk Orchestra.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, first you must invent the universe.
The Fallow Time Folk Orchestra will begin with a song called The Gentle Arms of Eden. Mystic, endless ocean, where the world lay in a dream. There was rhythm in the splash and roll, but not a voice to sing. So the moon fell on the breakers as the morning warmed the waves, and a single cell did jump and hum in joy, as though to say, this is my home, this is my only home. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. Should I stray in this dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Now the day shone bright and rounder as the one turned into two, and the two into 10,000 things, and all things into new. And on some virgin beachhead, one lonesome critter crawled. As he looked about, he shouted out in his most astonished drawl, this is my home, this is my only home. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. Should I stray in this dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in gentle arms of Eden. And the sky was buzzing round, and the ground was carpet green, as the weary children of the woods were dancing in between. So the people sang rejoicing as the fields were glad with grain, from their songs of celebration and the cities on the plain. This is my home, this is my only home. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. Should I stray in this dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Now there's smoke across the harbor and factories on the shore, and the world is ill with greed and will and enterprise of war. But I will lay my burdens in the cradle of your grace, in the shining beaches of your love, in the sea of your embrace. This is my home, this is my only home. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. Should I stray in this dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden.
The call to worship today comes from Victoria Safford, who's a UU minister at White Bear UU Church, just outside of St. Paul, Minnesota. The story is older than the story of salvation. It begins in that event, that moment, that split second of light, or music, or love, or fire, or whatever it was, when matter and energy and being explode out of the pinpoint of no being. For me, the story begins behind the velvet curtain that separates what we know from mystery. This is the story of the universe, the cosmology of stars and suns and life and no life, all of which I call creation, even though I know of no creator. Recently, I learned in the Hopi language, there are no nouns like these, only verb forms to describe such things. So all of this, all the cosmos, would be called creating, and I think I like that better. It is not a human-centered story. Human history is part of something larger, more eternal, and more infinite. But ours is the laughing part of the story, the sorrowful part, the evil part, the compassionate part, the noticing part, the reverent part, the irreverent part, the conscious part. From birth to death, we shine like stars and then explode, and our lives are recapitulations of that original creating. As a child once told the famous teacher, Sophia Lyon Foss, after studying seeds that became marigolds in a paper cup, and after the arrival of a newborn baby sister, which meant the arrival of both unprecedented hatred and unprecedented tenderness, God is what knows how to grow.
Wisdom words this morning, which you've all heard before, but perhaps have not attended closely to in a while, from the book of Genesis, one of the stories of creation. And I thought, since this is a familiar text, that it might be nice today to hear this in multiple voices. So I need 6 volunteers who would like to help deliver this text. So if you're willing to help, please come on up. From the book of Genesis.
In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day.
And God said, "Let there be a dome in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." So God made the dome and separated the waters that were under the dome from the waters that were above the dome. And it was so. God called the dome sky, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day.
And God said, "Let the waters under the sky be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees of every kind on earth that bear fruit with the seed in it." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed of every kind, and trees of every kind bearing fruit with the seed in it. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day.
And God said, "Let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth." And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. God set them in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day.
And God said, "Let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky." So God created great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, of every kind, with which the waters swarm, and every winged bird of every kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening, and there was morning, the fifth day.
And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures of every kind, cattle and creeping things, and wild animals of the earth of every kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals of the earth of every kind, and the cattle of every kind, and everything that creeps upon the ground of every kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our own image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created humankind in God's image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps upon the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all their multitude. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation.
Thank you all very much. Thus ends the reading, and with the words of these two stories of creation in our ears, and on this day of Sabbath, we will now gather ourselves together for a few moments of stillness. Spirit of life, creative love, holy breath. Now we breathe. We breathe the breath of life, which was given us as a gift, not because we asked or intended, and yet it was given. And here we are, creatures on this blue-green earth. The breath of life sustains us, and so we breathe. Let us notice that this breath is not ours alone, but sustenance for all of the creatures of the earth. By this breath, we are connected. By this breath, we are sustained. With this breath, we have the gift of this day. With this breath, we have the possibility of knowing and feeling and being and making and contributing to the source of creative love. And so we breathe, and we give thanks, And we pledge again to use our lives as a force for good, for beauty, for love. Amen.
The story of Genesis and that of Sky Woman provide contrasting philosophies of the origin story and of man's relationship with nature. Genesis tells of an all-powerful being creating the heavens and earth and forming man out of dust and woman out of his rib. It ends in conflict as the humans disobey their God's instructions and are cast out of the garden for a life of toil in the soil, fighting to survive. The story of Sky Woman, however, teaches that the world was created out of a chance encounter between the island people of the sky and the water creatures below. They band together and create Turtle Island and nurture the plants that sustain them all. They live in harmony with nature and with each other. I am drawn to these colorful stories of creation for the sheer fantasy of their images. Imagine sitting around an ancient fire trying to answer the question of who we are and how did we get here. The stories are often beautiful, magical, powerful, and occasionally traumatic. But beyond their sheer artistic value, what role do these stories have in our lives today? I no more believe there was a Sky Woman falling as I would believe there was an Eve who was the mother of all humans. Their modern value lies in the way these stories have shaped a culture's attitudes and relationships with the natural world. Sky Woman's salvation by the water animals and her reciprocal planting of seeds informs the way native peoples continue to be connected with the land. The descendants of Eve have fallen into a path where the land has become a tool to work for their survival as a means to an end of getting to heaven. Today, as a humanist, I am more drawn to the scientific stories of creation, the Big Bang, the primordial soup, the survival of the fittest. These stories pull objective observations into a narrative that also tries to explain how we got here. Scientific inquiry points out that the Earth formed without any direction from humans, and how it seems that all we have done is to pollute and destroy the end result. You might come to believe that nature would be better off without us. But this nihilism is also shaped by the story of Eve and seen through an inherent conflict between man and nature. Perhaps if we choose to view our scientific stories through the lens of Sky Woman, we might see that the world of man and nature have been interdependent since the beginning. We have relied upon nature for our sustenance, but nature has needed us to build up the soil and to spread the seeds of life. We are a necessary part of the web of life, equal to, but not above, all other creatures and plants.
Way back in the beginning, where did we come from? In their book of the same name, Brian Swim and Thomas Berry tell the universe story. They trace the unfolding, what they call the primordial flaring forth of the universe, to the present age. Everything that has ever existed, they explain, is the result of the creative, destructive, primordial energy of the universe. Our solar system, the Earth, and everything upon this planet derives from that creative, destructive, evolving energy, including, of course, us. Billions of years of evolution made our lives possible. Evolution didn't happen on purpose or with any consciousness of process, and yet here we are, conscious beings, able to learn that we are quite literally made of stardust, and able to learn, too, all the stories that people have told throughout time in answer to the age-old question, where do we come from? The indigenous people of the Great Lakes region tell a story which suggests we are the descendants of Sky Woman. That's the first layer of the story. A deeper layer of the story, as we peel it back, says that we come from the dual elements of gratitude and reciprocity. We come from the elements of gratitude and reciprocity. Our lives are dependent on the lives of other creatures, and on the earth and the water and the sun. Our lives are dependent upon sharing what we have and upon gratitude for all that has been so freely shared with us. Had the history of encounter between the indigenous people of this place where we live and the European colonists gone differently, we might be more intimately familiar with the Sky Woman story, and it might have shaped our history. But that isn't how the encounter went. Thus, the history of our country has been primarily shaped by biblical origin stories. It's important to note that the ancient people who compiled the text in the Hebrew Bible told more than one story about whence we come. But like the differing accounts of Jesus' birth, they're often told as one story. And Jeff illustrated that for us, talking about the ways in which Eve was created from the rib of man, and God created Adam out of the dust. You didn't hear that in the story that our folks told for us this morning. It's the other story, the other creation story in Genesis. There are two, and they are quite different. The older of the two stories is the one that Jeff mentioned, which is told in Genesis 2 and 3. About the origins of Adam and Eve and their placement in the Garden of Eden and all that unfolded thereafter. That story was written around the 10th century before the Common Era, which is almost impossible to imagine how long ago that was. The 10th century before the Common Era, that story was written down, and so it was told long before that. It was created in a time, written down in a time when the ancient Hebrew people lived in a monarchy in Israel, the times of the great kings, David and Solomon. At that time, those ancient people were trying to remember their origins as a people. Where did they come from? And their history of covenant with God in order to help shape their collective understanding of what it meant to live their lives in response to God's call and God's promise. The story in Genesis 1, which we heard this morning, was written about 300 years after that story in Genesis 2. It was written around the 5th or 6th century of before the Common Era, and in a very, very different context. Because at that time, the people had been conquered and exiled to Babylon and had lived many generations in Babylon. And that time of exile was just coming to an end. And the people were returning to their land. And the people studied their scriptures and realized that there was more to the story that needed to be told. At that time, when people were conquered, the general worldview was that their God had been conquered too. And so here these people are, returning from exile, studying their scriptures, and needing to understand who they are now in relationship to God, who their God is, and where they come from. In the first creation story in Genesis 2, God creates Adam and Eve, who become the ancestors of the Hebrew people. In the creation story later added in Genesis 1, God creates everything. God creates as an act of poetry. God speaks and creates. Creates light and dark, sun and moon and stars, sky and sea and land and everything that grows upon the earth. In Genesis 1, God is the creator of all, which is a remarkable story for a conquered people to tell of their God. These stories, the story that science tells and the story that the indigenous people of this region tell and the stories that the Bible tells, are all incredibly different stories about where we come from. And yet, what they have in common is the understanding that in the beginning was creating. Evolution is a wildly creative process, and thus we exist and can enjoy daffodils and blue jays and all the other plants and animals that live upon the earth. And the creatures created in the Sky Woman story an intervention to help Sky Woman land on Turtle's back, which eventually became the earth seeded with green. And God created, humans in God's own image in the story of Genesis. The text in Genesis 1 goes on to say that God gave the people dominion over the rest of creation, and that word has been used repeatedly throughout the history of Christianity to justify domination of the earth. But many scholars say that understanding of dominion to mean domination is a misreading. In other places in the Bible, the verb that is translated dominion is used to describe the way in which a king should care for his subjects. In Genesis 1, the idea that is being expressed then is that people should care for the earth and for the animals and the plants in a way that is like God would treat his people, for God is the ultimate king. With this reading, it's just as valid to understand Genesis 1 to be emphasizing the interconnectedness of all God's creations. It's just as valid to be understanding the privilege of dominion as both the privilege and the responsibility to care for all of God's creations. It's just as valid of a reading, but it's one that has only come to be articulated in the last few decades as Christians in particular have felt the need to respond to the ecological crisis in which we live by returning to the scriptures and seeing what other stories may be there that had been previously overlooked. And that movement in Christianity is called creation care. It's a new reading, but it's just as valid, in my opinion. So how we understand our origins matters. Where we think we come from affects how we live, which means it also affects our future possibilities. The native people of this part of the world said that we come from gratitude and reciprocity. The Europeans who settled here believed that we come from God and with God's blessings to yield power over the earth. Science teaches that we are the result of the process of evolution, which has no moral purpose or intent whatsoever. And yet, one of the things that we humans seem to need to do is to make meaning of our lives. Unitarian Universalists look to science and Judaism and Christianity and earth-centered religious traditions for wisdom about what it means to be human. We don't just choose one source, for we believe that there's more than one truth. The truth that I find in the Sky Woman story is that our lives are dependent upon the lives of others. The truth that I find in the story of Genesis is that this, all of this, is good. Did you hear that in the reading of the Genesis story? After each creation, God said, "And it is good. It is very good. All of this is good." And the truth that I find in the story of the universe is that the origins from which we come are creative. Creative and destructive both, and forever unfolding in acts of creation. And we have inherited each of these. And each of them can influence the way in which we live our lives. We are the descendants of creativity. There's a field in theology called process theology. And they have a way of talking which is quite complicated, and so I'm oversimplifying here, but what I would like to pull out is the understanding that the creative force that is the history of all that is in us. But not only is it in us, it is also in God, which means that as we create, we are creating God. And as God creates, God is creating us. In an ongoing relationship of reciprocity. It's a whole different understanding of God than you perhaps have heard before. God in process theological views is not a supernatural, omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent force, but rather this evolving God of creativity in relationship with the people. Process theologians are in many branches of religious life. There are Jewish process theologians, there are atheist process philosophers, and there are Christian process theologians. And one of the things that Christian process theologians point out is that This way of understanding the relationship of creativity between God and people can be found all the way back in that first Genesis story. If you heard it, in Genesis 2, with which many people are familiar, the world was covered with dust, and God breathed into the dust to create humanity. But in Genesis 1, there was this chaos, and God created in relationship to the chaos, separated, created the earth and the skies. So God was creating in relationship with all the way in the beginning, and God is creating in relationship with now. God is creating in relationship with us. One of the ways in which Marjorie Hewitt Shuhakyi, a process theologian, talks about this is about the three powers of creation. There's the creative power of the past, which comes to us as the history of all the choices of all of the people who have ever lived before us, the way in which they enacted their creativity. The second power is the creative power of God, who is luring us to possibilities for the good, which can be manifest in the future. And the third creative power is the power in us. And so God is not controlling us as puppets on a string, but rather God is that force which is luring us to choose to use our creative powers for the good. It's a very different way of understanding God. And if God language doesn't work for you, I think that this process way of understanding creation still works. There's a creative power in the universe which we have inherited, not only as a gift of our history, our ancestry, of all that has been, but in us. There is this creative power in us which we can trace all the way back through the origins, to the origins of life on this planet. And that creative power in us will influence the unfolding of the future. It may seem obvious, but if we take the time to really stop and contemplate that power, the power in us, the power in all of us, I believe that is a source of great hope. So call it God, or call it the unfolding of the universe, or call it whatever you will, but there is this force, this creative force we have inherited and which is luring us into the future, luring us to choose the good so that the ones who follow us may continue to enjoy this glorious world upon which we live. May it be so, and amen. All this month, we have been celebrating the acts of generosity of the people of this congregation who have contributed to our stewardship campaign. Our annual stewardship campaign is the way in which we invite pledges of support to sustain the ministries of this place. And we've been inviting those who have chosen to contribute to share with us about why they have decided to give. And this morning, Saunas Parsons is sharing with us.
Well, you probably won't be surprised to hear that music is what originally drew me to this church, in spite of the fact that I had a friend who had told me that I could go to any church but this one, because this one was a cult. Luckily, I had another friend who had begun attending here, and he wasn't shy about sharing his many positive experiences. He talked about the amazing Hal Walker and all the unusual music that he played. He told us about this new choir that they were just getting started and how much fun it was to sing in it. So one Sunday morning, I came with a friend of mine, and it was just like coming home. We joined the choir that same week, I think. And music became my entree to the church. I did a little research before I wrote this and found that participation in church music programs is strongly associated with active participation in other areas of church life and leads to a strong feeling of connection to the church. That was certainly my experience. I met a lot of wonderful people through the choir and soon signed the membership book and gradually became more and more involved in the life of the church. Our church has been blessed with an abundance of musical talent, from our music director, Hal Walker, who writes a lot of our music, to our amazing pianist, Vanessa Vesely, our music committee members, and all the volunteers that make up the various musical groups, which at this point numbers somewhere between 40 and 50 people in just the groups alone. Then there's the weekly Sacred Song Circle group, the monthly community sing-alongs, and all the other church musicians who lend their talents to special music for services or as fundraising opportunities for the church. Our church music ministries enhance the life and work of this church and its members. And all of this music makes us stronger and more vibrant. But while doing my research, I also discovered that many churches have been cutting out their music programs altogether as part of other cost-cutting measures. They end up playing only recorded music, or they sing only congregational hymns. Unfortunately, people often miss how much time, effort, and dedication go into a good music program because all the preparation goes on behind the scenes. And if they don't recognize the benefits of their music program, they may not make the commitment to find the funds to keep it going. If you have been touched by the music ministry of this church and would like to ensure that we continue to be able to enhance the life and work of this congregation, I hope you'll join me in turning in your stewardship pledge card and consider adding an additional amount, however small, to help us pay our music director a fair wage and to keep our music ministries humming along.
You are a good and loving people. Take your creative power out into the world and be a blessing. Amen.